You know those baby Einstein videos? They don't work. Disney's offering your money back if you bought one. Or baby Mozart. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Today we'll talk about what the science actually says about early childhood education and the opportunity cost of not paying attention to this. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, local call in Anchorage, 550-8422. The young brain is the subject on Talk of Alaska, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. People are either sighted or blind, right? Wrong. Many eye conditions can lead to low vision, and people with low vision have some sight, but even with glasses, they may still have trouble doing things they're used to. A low vision assessment helps people identify special tools and skills to live on their own independently and succeed at work. Learn more at 248-7770 or alaskabvi.org. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired with support from Lions Clubs.
Yeah, it's true. The baby Einstein or baby Shakespeare, baby Mozart all came from Disney. And the science behind it was questionable to begin with, and now the company has been persuaded that maybe it wants to make more liberal terms on its original 90-day money-back guarantee and just make it a guarantee in perpetuity. There were scientists that could have said all along if they'd asked whether this would work or not, because these type of videos deal with functions that in an infant are just beginning to develop, and they'd be better applied later on, at least. We're going to talk about early childhood education. We hope to get a scientist involved in the field with us, but I think both of our guests in the studio here in Anchorage are pretty acquainted with this science already because they are deeply involved in the organization Best Beginnings. I think I'll start with you, Abby Hensley. When did your involvement with Best Beginnings begin?
Well, Best Beginnings itself started just about 3 years ago and was the outgrowth of several years' work with a task force, the Ready to Read, Ready to Learn task force, who came up with some recommendations and released them in the summer of 2006. So we've been involved with Best Beginnings in making those recommendations come to life since then.
And what drew you to this?
Well, I'm a mother. I'm a grandmother. I have been interested in early childhood for a long, long time since I did some graduate work many years ago. And then it just seemed like it was as I did some other work with the PTA and with Ready to Learn here at KAKM and at in Washington, D.C., this whole notion of what happens in the early years just became more and more critical to me. I saw the results of when there was good interaction with parents and children through the years and also the results when that didn't happen.
I think, the theory, most people can buy into the theory because it's not all that hard to understand. Basically, you need to get involved in the early years. You basically want to be very engaged with your child. And the more that that happens, the more that's going to awaken facilities in them that they can build on later on in life. To that point, I think very few people would disagree. You know, I don't imagine people love sitting their kids down in front of TV sets as babysitters, for instance. But then it is, how do we do other than that? I mean, when you have a family that both parents are working, they're trying to find the right daycare, or maybe they are using a babysitter who's a kid from next door, who it just starts to get harder and harder to figure out how we can possibly tackle this. Where is the answer? How do we even begin? It seems like we might even be going backwards here.
I think one of the things that we at Best Beginnings have been trying to say all along is that is that this whole issue of early learning really is everybody's business. And it's important to all of us as citizens of our state and our country to ensure that, you know, that we have an economically viable future, and that has to do with people. I think one of the things that happens with young families is, as you said, you know, people are off to work, they're worried about putting food on the table, and these days in particular when perhaps one of the parents has lost a job. But it's the quick, easy things, I think, that we often forget about that can make such a difference. It's the quick word of encouragement, it's the pat on the back, it's, you know, many of those kinds of things. And with young children, you know, they're not going to let you get away with not paying attention to them. I think one of the saddest things that we see sometimes and talk about is when, there's a parent with a young child in line someplace at the bank or the post office or whatever, and the child is just, you know, mommy or daddy wanting to talk and to be engaged, and the parent doesn't realize how easy it is to just have a little conversation, a little interaction with the child, and the real huge difference that can make.
So where's the resources? I mean, there's people listening right now, you know, I can imagine, for instance, some grandparents, some aunts, some uncles, and saying, well, geez, you know, I see that happening in my own household. Where can people go to learn more?
The Best Beginnings website, bestbeginningsalaska.org, has lots of ideas for activities. Quick, simple things that adults can do with children from birth to age 5. We also at Best Beginnings have produced some activity guides for young children, for adults to use with young children, in English, Spanish, and most recently in Yupik. So
wow.
there are those kinds of resources available to people right now. Also, I think that the Imagination Library that Best Beginnings has taken up as a statewide sponsor for is another way that, another easy way that families, adults can be engaged with their kids. You know, this is a program in which an enrolled child from birth to age 5 receives a free book in the mail every month. And what we're told is that when that book comes to the mailbox and the young child sees it and knows that's his or her book, that they carry the book around, they insist that the book be read. And as those of us who are parents and grandparents know, it's over and over again, is that book being read. But that book reading, sharing a book, can act really as a jumping off place for lots of other things, for conversation, for pointing out what's in the book, looking at the pictures, talking about colors, and even making up stories yourself. So I think there are lots of quick, easy things that families can do already.
Our guest is Abby Hensley of Best Beginnings. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. Also with me is David White, president of Commonwealth North, formerly president of Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, and deeply involved with this issue, I guess, David, we would say as a private sector person.
Yeah, first I'm like Abby. I'm a parent. I'm a grandparent. So I'm currently involved with my own young children and my grandchildren. Certainly that piqued my interest. But corporately, there was a lot of interest because in part of my responsibilities in various parts of the world, I had schools that we were responsible for organizing and running. And the only way you could get good employees to come to those locations was to have good schools. And so you start to see a economic value as well as a personal value related to what we're talking about. So pretty logical from several standpoints. The business may be a little bit less than normal, but certainly I think most businessmen would see it if they get that kind of involvement.
Well, you know, in 2006, a paper was put out by the National Scientific Council on the Developing Child. And what it basically said is that the workplace of the future is going to demand not just trade skills, but problem-solving skills, emotional stability, things that really are acquired by a person way before they get in school. I guess you would echo that.
Absolutely. I mean, my own personal experience at home, and because of the type of education system my young son's involved in, I participate in class. This social-emotional development that's so critical when they first show up in school, it's a wide range. You can see kids that are way ahead to kids that are 1, 2, 3 years behind. And it's not a fault of any one individual. It's a fault of a whole combination of factors. You mentioned one, for example, very busy parents, couple of jobs, maybe only one parent in the house. So there needs to be a system that helps support them, proper child care, higher quality child care, affordable child care, and a early education system that not only gives them information, but provides some of that development as they're in that system. So there's a big opportunity. Abby and I both strongly believe that what we're doing in Best Beginnings is the overarching part. We're trying to bring all these organizations together, state involvement, and really give a better approach to the early childhood development that will make a big difference.
This scientific paper points out that the investment is best made young. In other words, you're dealing, I guess, with what you would call opportunity cost, that if you end up with people that can't get in the workforce or emotionally have emotional problems, behavioral problems, and so forth, that can be very costly to society. I guess that makes all kinds of sense. But still, you know, daycare people are way underpaid. It's just hard to imagine where the money could possibly come from to do something that makes sense in this area. I ask either one of you. I don't know who wants to jump on, because I'm sure this is, you get this all the time.
Let me try it as a business person. Businesses are about making a profit. Therefore, they have to organize their business around things that will give them a return. Early childhood development is a proven investment that gives society a return. You can go out and look at all the papers that are out there. When it's done properly, depending on who you talk to, it's somewhere from $3 to $17 for every dollar invested. Now, you say, where do I get that? Do we get it in higher grades? Not really. But do you get it in social-emotional development? The answer is yes. And what does that mean? More kids graduate from high school. Fewer of them get into drugs. Fewer of them, therefore, get in trouble with the legal system. There are fewer criminals. When you look at the cost, society cost, of all these things that are avoided by proper development, that's where you get all your money back. But it's a long-term investment. So it's like a corporation. You have to say, I need to build this factory because this is the type of business I need to be in, and it's got to be of a certain quality. And therefore, it's a long-term investment that really drives a great return to society. Quick example is that there's some statistics that say 1 in 10 non-high school graduates are in some form of legal system custody. And that's probably a bad word, but anyway, they're involved with the legal system at an expense to us. 1 in 35 high school graduates are involved in that same system. So you can see a huge change if we can drive an improvement in high school graduation, which we can do if we do it properly at the beginning.
Well, so what's the tactic, Abby Hensley? Where does one begin? I mean, they talk about expanding Head Start, for instance. Would that be one thing?
Well, and you're right, it's a complicated issue. And it's complicated because we don't really, at this point, have any sort of coordinated effort around early childhood. You know, in with the K-12.
Well, you got your sleeves rolled up on that one.
Yes. With the K-12 system, you know, there are school boards that do that kind of thing. What we're trying to do right now, based on a model that's proven to be successful in other states, is to develop some, what we're calling early childhood partnerships in some communities, so that they can begin to coordinate the services, find out first of all what the issues are, what the community has, and then figure out how to use resources better. At the state level, Best Beginnings is working with the departments of Health and Social Services and Education and Early Development to create what is typically known as an Early Childhood Advisory Council, to really begin on a formal basis to bring together at the state level all these sort of disparate programs and projects and such, and to really develop this comprehensive system for young children in our state. So that's kind of a wonky way to look at it. But, you know, without that kind of infrastructure, we're really at a disadvantage in our state because, you know, and you can say, yes, invest more in Head Start. And I think there's, you know, there are long waiting lists for Head Start programs. Our state just recently invested $2 million in a pilot program for preschools that, with money flowing to school districts to do that. That's another piece of the puzzle. We know that Denali Kid Care, for example, is another thing that is being talked about and we're looking at, especially for young children. And there's a whole slew of things that are out there, but we need really to bring things together to be able to have a really cohesive look at early childhood in our state.
Is this one of those deals where we can look to some other state for an example?
There are a number of other states who are farther ahead than we are in this work. The state that probably has been at it the longest is North Carolina with their Smart Start initiative. Started some 16 years ago, and that really is a combination of a state-level public-private partnership like Best Beginnings, working with local communities, like these early childhood partnerships that I mentioned, to make this happen, to really have both bottom-up and top-down work being done and resources being invested.
You know, our guest is Abby Hensley of Best Beginnings. The telephone number 1-800-478-8255. Our email, if you'd like to respond that way, is talk@aprn.org. And it's a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. It's been an ongoing process to put together this thrust within the state for early childhood education. This is an organization that is trying to be an umbrella to continue bringing those forces together. And your call's welcome. Abby, I'm sure that you've heard this, and it's come up certainly here a number of times on Talk of Alaska. People say, look, when you start talking about these problems, these pathologies, I remember when we had the high school, Mountain View school episode, that violence at the school where somebody in the school staff ended up dead out of it. It happened really before the school was in session. And we had Carol Como come on and talk about what's going on here, what can we do? And she said, look, it's just a sad situation. These kids are being dropped off at the school early because they don't have any place else to go, and their parents have other places they need to go, and this is a growing situation that nobody's wanting to look at. And the callers would respond, and they would say, well, you know, we're just basically seeing the disintegration of the family here. We need to get back to family values. I'm sure you've heard that. What's your answer?
Well, I think what we're talking about really are family values, and we're talking about the value that we all hold, that young children are important and that we need to make sure that they're protected and nurtured and that they have what they need to grow up to be productive citizens. You know, I think, too, that virtually every parent wants the best for his or her child. And sometimes they have problems knowing what to do or where they can get help and that kind of thing. And so I appreciate the difficulty of that. And whether it's in a large community like Anchorage or Fairbanks or Juneau or a smaller one, it's hard sometimes to be able to find help when you need it as a young parent.
Yeah. David White, you got anything to throw in here?
Yeah, I'd like to jump right in the middle of one of the things that kind of sits out there, and that is pre-K, child care are things that aren't necessary because you can do all this at home.
And yes, exactly.
Let's kind of look at this, the facts. Many families have to have full-time jobs. Both parents or the single parent has to have them. Sometimes they have to have two jobs to support their family. So we're not talking about systems that take kids away from the home. We're talking about systems that support children because their parents have to be out of the home. And it also supports parents in terms of their knowledge and ability to do their job while they're around. So if you take a look at the way America is today, you've got a lot of kids that don't have parents at home for a long period of time. It's an economic reality. So how do we support that? We have tools to help parents be better parents while they're at home. You asked questions earlier about how about child care and affordable child care? Well, the issue there is it's got to be so low cost that people can use it, but then that doesn't provide the incentive for the child care people to improve their development and their delivery. Well, my argument is that is then becomes a community responsibility because the outcome drives good economic return to us. So if we don't have a good enough child care system and it's not affordable, then I think we need to work on how we get the child care system graded, how we get improvements into the system. We put some money in there that rewards the system for getting better. And that has to come from us as a community rather than parents because parents can't afford it. And then you get the better outcomes later on because people are ready to be educated. They go through high school and they become productive members of society rather than takers away from society.
Is there a... Oh, go ahead, Abby Hensley.
And in fact, we have been working here in our state to develop that kind of system that David is talking about that really does rate programs on particular standards and then helps those programs to get better by infusing resources and technical assistance into the program. And what I understand, too, is that you know, it's really expensive to run a quality early learning program. And the majority of the budget really goes toward paying staff, even though those staff members are not very highly paid.
Yes, exactly.
What research is showing, too, is that early childhood educators who have a bachelor's degree typically have much better programs, higher quality programs for young children than those who don't. Now, I want to say typically because there's always the fabulous person who has a high school degree who is an incredible teacher. We all know of those people. But across the board, typically it's shown that those with a degree will have a better program for kids. Mm-hmm. And I agree with David that we need to figure out how to make the right investments early on so that we see the return that we're looking for in later years. And because it is a long-time investment, it's often difficult for us to really get our heads around that. You know, we're kind of living in this instant gratification world and thinking of waiting 20 years to see the return on investment is tough.
Well, yeah, I would think so. I mean, David White, for a company, an oil company, has a longer planning horizon than many would say. Like 2 years would be much better. Well, where is the rubber going to meet the road? Is there something that's likely to come up in the coming up legislative session? Have you got the administration on board with this? What can people look toward as a building towards actually doing something about this? I mean, ultimately, it's going to take money.
It is going to take money. And as Alaskans, we don't shy away from that typically. That when we are convinced that an investment is the right one, I think we'll step up to it. I mentioned this statewide early childhood advisory council that's being formed right now that will then enable the state to receive some federal money to work more on the system stuff. I know that that this pilot pre-K program, you know, is a certainly a part of the picture. And I understand that the Commissioner of Education and Early Development, Larry Ledoux, is certainly interested in ensuring that it moves forward. So there are, you know, I think there are several initiatives like that that can be helpful.
All right. Did we get hold of Dr. Cameron? We did. Oh, thank you. Dr. Judy Cameron, you've been listening to us?
Yes.
Well, welcome to the program. Judy L. Cameron is a psychiatrist, University, Oregon Health and Science University, and a member of the National Scientific Council on the Developing Child. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Then if you've heard our conversation, I would like to turn back to the baby Einstein thing that we started out with and get an explanation from you, because I kind of muffed it when I was doing it, as to why it turns out that these don't work real well.
Well, I think that it's a matter of providing information to kids at a time where they're not ready for information. The way the brain develops is different neural circuits form at different times. So a baby's born with brain cells, and those brain cells start making connections, and you have different processes in the brain that have connections made at different times. So the very first connections have to do with seeing and hearing, and then you have connections that are made that have to do with receptive language and speech production. And lastly, the very last thing to form are connections that have to do with higher cognitive function. So if you're trying to teach the brain to do things that it hasn't developed connections yet to be able to do, it really is not effective.
Now, is there a real... has it actually been measured?
When connections are made, it has been measured. And so you see that a lot of connections are made for seeing and hearing in the first couple months of life. The peak of higher cognitive function, the neurons and connections that support that, is around 1 or just a little over 1 year of life. So it's quite a bit later. It doesn't mean that you're completely ready to learn new things as soon as you have the brain connections that allow you to do it, but you're certainly not ready before they happen.
Okay, so now that we've disposed of the baby Einstein again, let me try and walk into the science a little bit more deeply. This paper that you're a co-author with, along with Knudsen and a number of others, basically members of your group, as I understand it, was able to go back and look at two cases where there were programs.
Right.
Where they actually managed to track data for a length of time to see what the outcome would be. And this is what we've been talking about. David White's been explaining, too, that when you have a 20-year payback, that's an awfully long time. But the indications are, I guess, the longer you watch, the more you see the benefits.
Well, that's right. But research into what leads to good early education programs is coming along fairly rapidly. And there is a website that can be looked at on the Center for the Developing Child at Harvard University. And part of that is the National Forum on Early Childhood Program Evaluation. And they have tried to distill what are the things that should be paid attention to. And I was listening to Abby and David, who mentioned a number of these things. And just to reiterate, then, there are really six elements that appear to be very important: having highly skilled teachers, having small class sizes or high adult-to-child ratios. Third, having age-appropriate curricula. That's really what we were talking about with the baby Einstein. It may have been curriculum ahead of where the child was. Fourth, having a language-rich environment so the child can hear language and can speak. Fifth, having a warm, responsive interaction between the staff and the children. There's a give and take, or what the National Child Council often calls a serve and return. And then having high, consistent levels of child participation. So when you can find programs with those six elements, they have a very high likelihood of being effective in doing what you want to do.
Dr. Cameron, can you stay with us past the break here?
Yes.
I'd really appreciate that. Before we take our break, let me ask you one basic question, which I also asked our other panelists. What brought you to this field? What was your personal interest?
Yes. Well, I actually am a basic researcher. I study brain development, and we look at brain development using animal models. But as you find data that suggests that it would really make a difference to kids' lives, you start to think about translating that to children, and I became more interested in the translation of basic neuroscience to affecting the lives of kids, and I've become very involved, really, over the last 8 years or so.
All right, thank you. Dr. Judy Cameron with us. The Young Brain is the subject on Talk of Alaska. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, statewide, and your calls coming up as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from AlaskaDispatch.com, reporting from across the state using multimedia and citizen journalism online to tell the story of our state. Find your Alaskan news at AlaskaDispatch.com. This flu season, every Alaskan should roll up their sleeves and fight the flu by making plans to get both the swine flu and regular seasonal flu vaccines. In the meantime, fight the flu by washing your hands often or using a hand sanitizer, coughing into your sleeve or a tissue, and keeping sick people at home. For more information on how to fight the flu, go to pandemicflu.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
It's Talk of Alaska. We're speaking of the young brain, and we all know that it would be quite expensive to start going deeper into early childhood education in terms of funding. I guess the question we're asking here is, how is it best done, and is it worth doing, and like that, because everybody's for it. It's a question of how you get there. Let's go to Lori Jones, a program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Lori. Hello, Lori.
How are you?
Very good.
Thanks. Thanks, David and Abby, for tackling this very difficult problem. I just like to say that I'm the parent of a dyslexic child, and sometimes these programs are hard to hear because when you're a parent who works really hard to do everything right and you send your kid ready to learn, it's difficult if they don't receive the instruction that they need.
And you're just saying that generally educational institutions can fail, or what are you saying here?
Well, I'm saying that, when we know that 50% of kids will probably learn how to read in a closet and 50% need a higher level of direct instruction, that we need to tackle that problem too. That parents are very important, but we have to have several pieces in place if we're going to be successful.
All right. Got more?
I can say that we know how to teach. We know how to do the direct instruction, so we might as well get in there and do it. As David talked about, the cost savings to our nation is tremendous because a screening was done on, I believe, the children in McLaughlin, and about 85% were screened positive for dyslexia. And just like the criminal justice system we talked about earlier that David mentioned, if we can get in there and we can produce readers, then we're going to have less people involved with the criminal justice system.
So this fundamental thing with dyslexia, let's go to Dr. Cameron here. There's some kind of neurological basis to dyslexia, isn't there?
There is. I think, though, the question being posed is, what do we need in the school system to allow these kids to really prosper and do as well as they possibly can?
Well, and I think, but for dyslexia, as I understand it, it's pretty well figured out, isn't it? Isn't the science pretty solid on how you deal with this?
There are a number of forms of dyslexia, and each child has their way of responding best. So you need several things. You need a highly skilled teacher, a well-educated teacher, and it also depends a lot on interaction between the adult, in this case the teacher, and the child. So the information is delivered to a child in a way that they specifically respond to. We often refer to that as the serve and return. Each child has specific ways of learning that they respond to particularly well. And if the adult is attentive to that and knows to be attentive to that, then they can deliver the information in a way that the child will respond back. Then the rate of learning is very, very fast. If you have a teacher who doesn't have time to have that kind of one-on-one interaction or doesn't have the education to realize that is what is needed, then you get less progress.
Okay, I'm getting it. So it's kind of like what they call adaptive management. You know, it makes a difference who's doing it and
yes.
what their skills are.
Exactly.
I gotcha. Anything you'd like to add on this dyslexia subject, Abby?
I think that sounds, Lori, like you're doing all that you need to do for your child, and so I applaud you for that.
Well, thank you. My concern is for the kids who can't afford to, the families that can't afford to get their children help, because in order to get direct instruction in this town, it's $50 to $75 an hour, and most children need about 100 direct hours of instruction to be able to move into reading.
Wow. So it sounds like we probably have a shortage of people who have these skills.
We have a shortage of people who have these skills. And one of the problems is that at the universities, most teachers who go, we get these great teachers in the schools, but they haven't had the opportunity to learn about how to do this kind of direct instruction in reading. And so we could help if, say, Best Beginnings collaborates with the university to work hard towards producing teachers who are prepared to teach kids how to read. We can really make a big difference there, and we can also make a big difference when we get school districts behind us and boards who are educated on the issues.
Lori, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Always
Bye-bye.
Glad to get back to the subject of reading. 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email can be handy, talk@aprn.org. The subject, the young brain. We've got Dr. Judy Cameron, Abby Hensley, and David White with us. And Robin joins the program. Oh, here we are. Yes, Anonymous. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi, this is Robin.
Okay, Robin, how are you? How are you doing?
I've retired from a 30-year career working with children here in Alaska in early childhood, mostly in the bush. But I did have an opportunity to work on a project here in Fairbanks a number of years ago, which takes after the military model for child care. The military has recognized that having really high-quality child care is a national security issue. You know, that they can't have people in the forces who are worrying about how their children are doing. And so what they do is they use a child care rating system, and they go in every year, and they, in great detail, use a rating system that was developed in North Carolina to look at the quality of the child care and to pinpoint exactly what they need to do, where they need to put the funds to have high-quality child care.
Yeah, and I think we heard from David White earlier that that's Best Beginnings is pushing that too, right?
I believe so. Your panelists could answer that.
Right.
But anyway, what we did was I trained a team to inter-rater reliability. We did ratings of all the child care programs here in Fairbanks. We spent a year working with them, and then we did another series of ratings, and we... You know, it was very clear that we had greatly improved the quality of child care here. But what happens is, if you don't continue to go after low teacher-child ratios and good curriculum and all of the things that have been mentioned before, that you lose your ground within about 2.5 years because there's so much turnover because we don't pay child care people enough, whereas the military has, you know, instituted ways and salary scales that maintain their staff. So I'd just like to say that we need to take a good look at what the military is doing, and if we're willing to do it for our young fighting forces, we ought to be willing to do it for the rest of the country.
Great thought there, Robin. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It's Talk of Alaska. The young brain is the subject. And we have a call from Akiak. Roy joins the program from Akiak. Roy, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Yeah, I got a question for Dr. Cameron. In her statements about essential elements of early childhood education, in studies that they've done nationwide, she stated some real good points, but I failed to hear her mention or state the importance of a parent or parental involvement in the early stages of early childhood education and working relationship of the parents of the children that are going through the education and importance. And I'd like to hear how important it is to have the parents involved and associating, relating, interacting, because she mentioned all this. And the one element that was not mentioned in this whole involvement is never, but those prior people have that called mentioned their involvement. But the essential element in this process, I believe, is parental involvement.
Roy, I think everybody is totally going to agree with you. And we were on that area a little bit before Dr. Cameron joined us. And certainly, Dr. Cameron, that's the best, isn't it?
Yes, it is a very important part of things. I kind of listed out elements that one would look for in the education environment itself. But having a really strong home situation for the child is very important. And we can see that when we look at programs like visiting home nurses or providing mental health programs for parents who need them, or substance abuse programs, all of these programs also have a very strong impact on allowing children to learn. They do because they improve the home life that the child is living in, so they come to the learning situation in a better situation and more ready to learn. So there's no doubt that a strong home environment plays a very critical role. Now, one issue can be, does it need to be the parents, the genetic parents? And sometimes children are removed from homes. As long as they're in home stable environments that provide many of these things, enrichment and nurturing, they do very well. So it's wonderful if it can be the child's natural home. If that's not possible, the child still can have a very good chance.
I want to say a word for grandparents and aunts and uncles.
Yes.
All right, Abby?
Thank you. And Roy, I really am glad that you called and made that point. And I think that to add to what Dr. Cameron has said about programs that are specifically designed to be held in the home with families, I also want to talk about what I think you were alluding to, Roy, and that's how organized programs, center-based or group-based programs for young children, must have a component of parent engagement. And we know that when parents are engaged with their children and their children's educational activities in a program, that's more likely to stay in place as children move through school, and that's one of the real indicators of what makes for successful kids. I also wanted to say that back to that notion of rating and how we know what good quality programs are. Robin, you mentioned the Hearts for Kids program in Fairbanks. The quality rating improvement system that we have developed in our state that we're trying to get implemented has, as a part of the standards, how a program really works with parents and becomes partners with parents in that child's care and education.
Roy and Akiak, you still with us?
Yes, I'm listening. I appreciate you addressing that. I just want you to make it known to the listening audience that's very important. Parents are very important. It's number one essential element in that educational process of a child. I'm no educator, but I'm a listener. I can, and sometimes I can think. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Roy. David?
I might build on that, Roy. First, my learnings here in Alaska would say that Alaskan Natives have been superb at taking their knowledge and imparting it to their young, because that's a way of survival and a livelihood. And we can learn a lot from that. And also, I'm going to take a little deviation for a second and tell you, if you think about it, in a classroom with 25 kids, one teacher, if they get 5 to 15 minutes of direct involvement with a teacher, that's probably exceptional. Well, we can find many multiples of that no matter how busy we are as parents. So the opportunity to shape and form and be beneficial to them is great. And then I've had some aha moments. As a business person, for example, I thought my day was really busy, and it was, but not so busy that we couldn't find those times. And for example, I took my son to school on the way to work and picked him up in the evening. All of a sudden, it dawned on me that we could spend 30 minutes each way interacting and talking about things of interest, what he did, what's going on outside in the world, what he see. So I had an hour of uninterrupted time for that serve and receive type thing that, had I not paid attention to it, I would have missed. And there are all sorts of things like that. My son learned how to read because he loved logos, and he wanted to know about every car in the parking lot. So when we went to a store, when we went out to eat, we walked through the parking lot and looked at cars. So it's all these opportunities are there as parents in your normal day, as compared to having to set aside specific time to do it. You just need to grab those opportunities, and it's really rich for both parties.
Yeah, you know, I have to add, too, to my time in villages, often being in somebody's household, you immediately notice how much more emphasis there is on extended family, how there are aunts and uncles and relatives around, and how kids are really kind of expected to be very engaged in village households. That's my observation. 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, teaming up with Alaskans since statehood, and together looking toward a bright future, and by Alaska Communication Systems, converging voice, video, internet, and data applications for business. ACS connects companies from the North Slope to Ketchikan to each other and the rest of the world. People are either sighted or blind, right? Wrong. Many eye conditions can lead to low vision. People with low vision have some sight, but even with glasses, they may still have trouble doing things they're used to. A low vision assessment helps people identify special tools and skills to live on their own independently and succeed at work. Learn more at 248-7770 or alaskabvi.org. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired, with support from Lions Clubs.
Some email responses. Talk of Alaska is the young brain today, and Sharon writes, I am very excited to hear about the resources available through Best Beginnings, especially the free book program, which I will be passing the information along. A book I read in the latest scientific research on raising and educating children is Nurture Shock by Paul Bronson and Ashley Merriman. The chapter on increasing vocabulary by interacting correctly with a babbling baby is worth its weight in gold. I would have loved to have had this information in this book while I was raising my three children. I think it should be required reading for all parents and educators. That's from Sharon in Anchorage. I want to go back to you, Dr. Judy Cameron here, and just a little bit maybe about the extended family and the role, you know, just the quantity of stimulus especially an infant can receive, and what effect that has.
Yes, I think that is critical. And living within extended families is usually a very, very positive situation. Children respond very well, as I said, to very directed stimulation. So that individuals in the family talk to them and they respond back. Before they can talk, they still respond very well to people paying attention to them, smiling to them, talking to them. As they respond back, they get responses that are directed specifically to them. The more people in their world that can do that, the faster they will learn that one-on-one interaction is very important.
David White of Commonwealth North and Best Beginnings, maybe you could go a little bit into some of the things that business owners might not have thought about that might help in this early childhood education thrust.
You know, there's first and foremost, you need to encourage family-friendly work practices so that people can properly conduct their business lives and their family lives. You end up with better employees, lower turnover rate, higher productivity. What are some examples? Flexible working hours make a huge difference, particularly to working mothers that have to get kids to school and then show up. Will your work environment allow that? Working from home with computer systems, things of that nature, can make a huge difference in how a family and a job works together. Other things, I think if you look, there are a number of high-quality childcare systems around here sponsored by businesses because they found a value to their employees. Where I worked, Alyeska was preeminent in my mind at volunteering to help. We took on Russian Jack, and they kind of adopted us too, quite frankly, but in terms of reading, corporate sponsorship, involvement with the kids, bringing them to the office, adding a value, one of those asset values that really makes a difference to kids, both corporately and with people. And you spend the time, there's a return on it. It's a good investment. It's like the health of your employees, the health of their family, and the well-being of their family really brings you big returns.
So there are some things that can be done in the private sector.
Absolutely.
1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. The Young Brain is the subject today, and Sunrise joins the program from Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I thank you so much for this program, and it has been a concern of mine my whole life that early, you know, learning has been not doing what it was supposed to be doing. Thank you to Ms. Cameron for her research, because I try to tell people I've done a lot with child care in my life, raised some kids, was raised in a homestead here, and had the opportunity to be in a Waldorf school in Switzerland for 2 years in first and second grade, and I try to tell parents, you know, that you can't put a chimney on a house before there's a roof and walls, but we do that with our children when we try to put ideas and information to them they're not ready for. And the work of Rudolf Steiner, I feel, is very significant, and I would encourage the reading of a book called The Kingdom of Childhood by Rudolf Steiner, in which he talks about how the child and the brain and everything develops. He compares a child, you know, like the education to the soil of a plant. The education is to a child as the soil is to a plant. And and the basic ingredients of the Waldorf education is that things are done in stages, and the kernel of it is, you know, one, the sense of wonder creativity, giving children something to imitate, because Rudolf Steiner explains that not only do children imitate their surroundings, but they actually are their surroundings until, you know, they become more and more individual as they get older. But
excellent.
In the beginning,
very, very good. Attendant. Yeah, Sunrise. Yeah, Rudolf Steiner, of course, was did his main work around the turn of the century. And since then, science is closing in, I think, on some of the things in his groundbreaking thought. And Judy Cameron, are you familiar with this, the Waldorf approach and the Steiner's theories?
No.
I see. Well, I'm not going to ask you then.
I'm familiar with the basic tenet of what's being discussed, though, and I think the analogy of architecture is a very good one. So that you want to build a sturdy foundation. If you try to build higher structures on a foundation that isn't sturdy, you will have problems and it won't be successful. And so that general tenet is well established now.
All right.
When I was asked what my point was here today, I actually haven't gotten to it yet, but...
Go ahead.
It is art. Art, there is so much in art which gives children, like in the Waldorf School, in the first grade, we learned to draw forms, beautiful forms, and then we learned to write, because you have to write before you read. And I think so many of these problems with dyslexia and stuff are because we haven't, you know, built, like Judy said, this foundation. I would like to read a little quote.
Wait. We got to wind up the show here. And Sunrise.
In ancient Greece.
Sorry. Thank you very much, Sunrise. From Trixie by email, thank you for having this discussion. We need more folks like Mr. David White and Abby Hensley to step up to the plate. I'm a former child care professional. I have a bachelor's degree. I loved working with young children. I was passionate. I only quit because I became increasingly aware that I was subsidizing the care I was providing with my own lack of benefits and paid vacation. Young children are the least likely to have the ability to organize and speak up about what they need. Thank you, Trixie. David White, I want to thank you very much for all the work you put into this and for coming on today.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's something that is a passion. I think everybody out there knows it. My challenge would be get involved, make a difference. You can do it in the classroom, in the community. For businesses, you need to take a leadership role like others have. Start child care centers. Do some things for your employees that make a long-term difference.
Abby Hensley, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Next week, Steve Hagenson, the Alaska Energy Plan, is brought before the people of Alaska. Gooseberry Peter at the controls, BD Trantina and Pat Yakko on the phones. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Finnair, with 50 years of flying experience and offering charter service throughout Alaska and the United States. Details online at finnair.com. First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Primera, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com. And by the Alaska Wounded Veterans Project, a nonprofit organization that provides assistance to veterans who were wounded both physically and psychologically during the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. Information at alaskastateelks.org. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.